We will come to some sort of order.
Order.
Okay, we don't have a quorum, but I wish we did. Upton Davis, that's going to go against your time, you know.
Okay.
Upton David, do you want to describe your bill? And was there an amendment or not?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment, the A2 amendment.
Okay, we can't move it until we get a quorum. But why don't you tell us what you're doing and why this is going to make Minnesota a better place?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 1972 is a bill that has a broad consensus. What we're doing here is we're saying that if you're a dentist from another state and you're duly and properly licensed in that state, that you can come to Minnesota, and if you provide charity care, if you will, you will not have to go through all the licensing procedures and everything like that. We do have, the reason it's here is because, Mr. Chairman, you know that I'm one of those wild spenders, and so there is a fiscal note here of $275. I've never seen one that
low.
You
got $300. I appreciate your frugality.
I knew 300 was your limit, tolerance limit. So there is a fiscal note of $275, and basically what we're doing is the Board of Dentistry will actually be monitoring this, and they will be collecting a $25 fee that in the current language can be paid by someone else. So I think it would be quite unseemly and quite ungentlemanly if in Minnesota we have a dentist that's coming in to do charitable care and we charge them. So the way this is structured, we will be able to pay the Board of Dentistry through other means. Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment, the A2 amendment, that has come from the department. And if you look on page 3 of it, if you have it, do they have it?
We have it.
On page 3, you'll just notice it's a technical correction. They're deleting the number 1,011,000 and inserting 961,000. And I believe this is from the department, this amendment.
Members have questions? You're now in order, Representative Davids. I'd like to move House File 1972 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And I'll move the A2 amendment. Any questions about the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendments adopted. Any last words, Representative David?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is a vintage Peace in the Valley situation where we actually have Delta Dental has been most gracious and generous in their contributions. Members, what we're looking at here is in Minnesota this summer, in the city of Mankato, there's going to be a dental clinic, and I have Ms. Laura Kramer from the Dental Association here for a very brief testimony. I know you're very busy today. And so if I could turn it over to her to describe what we're doing here.
30 seconds would be nice.
Or less. I think we're on a roll.
Laura Kramer with the Minnesota...
You don't got to talk.
The Minnesota Dental Association. And we brought this to Representative Davids because we have an event in August in Mankato, the 17th and 18th, where we're going to have about 1,000 volunteers. That includes dentists, dental hygienists, dental assistants, and members of the community who are coming together to provide $1 million of free dental care to about 2,000 Minnesotans in the area. And they're going to set up a big temporary clinic. They're going to do everything from extractions and fillings and cleanings to partial denture care and other things. So going to provide a lot of care, but we do have dentists who will come in from out of state. And this bill will allow those dentists to come in and practice on a temporary basis. We've set the limit to 10 days so that if in the future we do more than this event, they can use the one license per year to come and volunteer for other events as well. And the Minnesota Dental Foundation, which is part of the MDA, will be covering the costs for those dentists.
Very nice. Any questions for the testifier or the Representative Davids? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that this bill be sent off to Ways and Means with our recommendation that it become law. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
We're going to move to the Vogel bill, Representative Vogel, House Call 2503, since you saw he's here, and then we'll revert to the 2251 after that. Representative Vogel, I'll move your bill, which is being held over here, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Yes, yes, being held over for...
Well, welcome to the committee, and tell us, do you have a witness, too?
I have one who will be here to answer any other questions if... You know, the bill itself is simply just extending the closing date for the Wilmer Mental Health Hospital out there for 2 years. We're asking until 2014.
Right.
And until June 30th of 2014. You know, from the bill last year, the budget bill last year, we had it closing as of March 31st of this year. And we're just asking to extend that.
Actually, it was not before that date. So
okay,
right. So there was will at that time to continue it, and this chair still has that will. Well, why doesn't your testifier come up and say something to us? Is it Eileen Storerson?
Eric.
Is that who you have?
Yeah.
Oh, Eric Haugi.
Yes.
Okay. There was somebody else listed. So.
They couldn't make it.
Well, Mr. Haugi, could you tell us? We're not rushing through all these. We just had heard the other bill at some length in the Reform Committee, so that's why that was just to kind of come here and blink out because it's $275. I believe your bill spends a little bit more than that. And so if you can tell us how much money we need, and if it closes, what happens to the workers, what happens to the clients there?
Sure. For the record, Eric Haugi with AFSCME Council 5. This is a facility that's undergone changes over the past several years. Has about 22 to 30 employees there. And we're looking to just keep it open for another year while the department is looking at the whole system and the intake and outtake and how that influences it.
All right, and maybe the department can tell us if it closed where the people would go, the clients.
Well,
that's
Did
you know that offhand?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I mean, these are really the clients there are really the hardest to serve folks. They've had to have had two denials from other facilities to end up in this. In this IRTS, and so it's unclear whether they would go into the hospital or to jail or be homeless.
Okay. This is in the governor's budget, but maybe we can just kind of focus on this one before we get to that. So does somebody from the department want to come down and just tell us what's going to happen with these folks? I'm happy it's getting its own personal attention as opposed to part of a big bill, so I'm... Representative Vogel, I'm glad you brought this forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And
thank
we're
you.
Trying to find a way that we agree with you to keep this. Welcome to the committee.
Members of the committee, my name is Maureen O'Connell, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Chemical and Mental Health Services for the Department of Human Services. And I've been looking at the admissions and discharge information for people at the Wilmer facility, and currently it looks like they are being discharged from the IRTS facility to assisted to a variety of places, and one thing to note about the admissions to Wilmer is that, again, as Mr. Haugi was testifying, these are some of the most complex folks that are really coming from other facilities like Anoka and Community Behavioral Health Hospitals. It looks like 70% of the people being admitted to Wilmer are coming from either a hospital stay or the Anoka Regional Treatment Center. And so it really looks like Wilmer is acting in the system as we expected it would be, a step down from a hospital stay. So in some ways, to compare it to a physical world, people are coming to Wilmer for a rehabilitation and are staying and are, you know, getting that much better. They don't meet a level of criteria to be in a hospital, but they still need to be, they still need intensive care. And that's what Wilmer is providing. And so where they would go after, if Wilmer didn't exist, I think, you know, they might stay at a hospital level in our hospitals longer, which is more costly. They may stay at Anoka, which is the most costly place, longer because they need this intensive care as they leave from a hospital.
I appreciate that. Members have any questions? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Vogel. I agree that we need to keep this going for a short time, but I would really encourage the department to really step up its development of transitional facilities and care opportunities within the metro area, because disproportionately metro area residents are being served outside of their area, outside of the ability for family and friends to visit them, to be involved in their transition to community life. And I hope that you'll use this extension as an opportunity to work with the metro counties to develop alternatives for people who currently need discharge from Anoka but have very few options within their home communities.
Ms. O'Connell, just comment back.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, that's exactly what we plan to do over the next year, is to, in preparation for the 2013 legislative session, is to work with counties throughout the state of Minnesota to look at what level of facilities we need for people coming from Anoka and from other hospital stays.
Mr. Chair,
yes, Representative Bolton.
Just to address Representative Loeffler a little bit, we understand that, we appreciate that, and frankly, my hope is, as those people come out to visit their family out there, they'll decide it's such a wonderful place, they'll want to move there. And I might find some business out of that.
That's
besides,
good.
As a realtor.
Being a shameless plug into the
there
community.
You go. Stick it's up. A great community. It really is.
Wilmer, a good place to raise your kids. Is it a good place to raise your kids?
It is a great place to raise your kids, and it's where the lakes begin. Oh, so it's a great place.
And members, and I believe that when they closed the Wilmer Treatment Center out there, this was part of the compromise that kept something out there, and I'm interested in retaining that agreement as well, just as a... there used to be multiple treatment centers across Minnesota, and every one of them every member tried to preserve their own. That didn't go as well as we hoped, but progress being what it is. Well, thank you. I think we'll leave it at that, and we'll hold this over for possible inclusion. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and members for hearing this. Appreciate it.
Representative Anderson is going to come down, and while she's coming down, I see there's a couple groups in the room. I want to welcome the Disability Matters group, people with the green tags. Thanks for coming in. It does matter to us. Yeah, welcome. I see a few Joint Religious Legislative Commission. Coalition people here as well. So welcome to that. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I see in the audience a lot of green. Is that in honor of St. Patrick's Day from this past Saturday? Or is there a better... No. Okay.
We're back to a shameless plug. It's going to be nice to the audience. They were still celebrating, yeah. Well, there you go. Sorry for that digression. Representative Anderson, welcome to the committee. Do you want to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move House File 2251 to be recommended to pass and to... Or
laid
to be
over.
Laid over into inclusion in the omnibus bill?
Yeah. Actually, possible inclusion, but yeah.
Possible inclusion.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment to the bill. Can we move the A2 amendment?
Yeah, please. You want to move the A2 amendment then?
When we were going over the bill, we noticed that there were some chapters in existing law that were not included in the original bill, so we wanted to include these other chapters as well that deal with HMOs.
So then you'll be moving the, Representative Anderson moves the A2 amendment. Any members have questions about that? Okay, all in favor say aye. Oh, wait.
Aye.
Oh, sorry, I'm ahead. I didn't see the hand. Representative Liebling.
Yeah,
you have to take your eyes back, sorry.
Well, Mr.
Not
Chair,
trying to rush, I just...
Yeah, I guess I'd just like to understand a little bit. You know, when you get an amendment that's a bunch of numbers... You know, I don't know about you, but I don't memorize these chapter numbers. So It'd be nice to know a little bit more, you know, exactly what we're...
Ms. Kamik, could you please summarize each of those numbers for us?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. And specifically to Representative Liebling's question, these are other sites.
Oh, Ms., you have to tell us who you are.
Oh, I'm sorry. Members of the committee, my name is Catherine Kamik. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. These additional chapters are chapters within that address small group reforms, a variety of areas that pertain to health insurance companies, both health plans, HMOs, insurers, etc. And these are all the relevant chapters that have some effect on health plans. And so this amendment simply says to check these other, ask the reviser to check these other statutes and make sure that any pertinent changes that apply to HMOs also get changed accordingly.
Representative Liebling? Is that okay? All right. No, I'm sorry, I was going too fast. Any other questions from members on this amendment? I'll support them. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. The amendment's adopted. The bill's in the order you'd like. Representative Anderson, do you want to...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just have a few comments about the bill. Many of you have heard this before in the Reform Committee, and then it's been to the Commerce Committee and now to your committee. House File 2251 transfers the regulatory authority over HMOs from the Department of Health to the Department of Commerce. By doing this, the oversight of HMOs will be in just one agency. The Department of Commerce regulates all insurance carriers in Minnesota. When the HMO statutes were enacted in the 1970s, the decision was made to require them to be regulated by the Minnesota Department of Health because this was a new way of providing health coverage. Since then, the market has changed, and today the Department of Health has an interagency agreement with the Department of Commerce, and the Department of Commerce is currently regulating all the financials for the Department of Health in regards to HMOs. Currently, the regulatory system is fragmented with regulators in three different state agencies. This bill will achieve administrative efficiencies by locating all regulators in one place. The idea of transferring the regulatory authority of HMOs from the Commissioner of Health to the Commissioner of Commerce has been around for 10 to 15 years. Passage of this bill will also help consumers by locating the regulator in one place and not multiple places, so if they have questions, they'll know exactly which department to contact for their questions and be able to figure out which agency to contact. And, Mr. Chairman, we do have a fiscal note on the bill.
And I see it's reduced quite a bit from the previous estimates, which I think is more reasonable. And so it's $56,000 in the first year and $30,000.
So to clarify to the members, basically we're looking at a total of 7.9 full-time employees that will be transferred from the Department of Health to Department of Commerce. And these are the people that are currently in the Department of Health regulating the HMOs. So we're only talking about 7.9 people.
All right. Representative Huntley.
I can wait to the end. I have a comment, not a question.
Okay. Do you want to...
The other advantage to this is they currently are regulated in the same building, so it's going to be very easy to transfer these people over to the Department of Commerce. Okay. So thank you.
And Ms. Kamik, did you want to testify to the bill?
Yes. I'm just available to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Representative Huntley.
Does the... one of the departments have any comment? Health Department,
I see Mr.
Commerce
is up there. Does he want to come and testify in the? Oh, is that he doesn't want to? Well, we're going to transfer it to them. So I'd like to hear from him. It's nice to get him. He doesn't want to come there. Oh, he does. You can have no position if you like. That's also acceptable. So yeah. Don't mean to drag you down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Reich with the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I defer to the Department of Health on this matter.
Okay.
Since this is
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming. I just wanted to get you to the table, so it's a successful session. And I appreciate your non-statement. Mr. Knoppel, welcome to the table.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Knoppel. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Health. And I'm here for a couple of reasons. One is I'm not I've looked over the amendment. That is that gone on, or is that to be?
It was adopted, Mr.
My understanding of this would include a lot more than just the 8 employees, which, by the way, we weren't comfortable with to begin with. But this also transfers over the health economics program, which is where we're doing the provider peer grouping, where quite a bit of stuff is housed now. And so I'm wondering if that was the intent or whether I'm reading it wrong.
Mr. Chun, can you comment? I think it's, I had a separate project on that, which I'm not doing now, but just to help you feel better. Is this solely the regulatory of
Mr. Chair, the HMO? The instruction to the revisor refers to changing the terms. I guess it says in reference to the regulatory oversight of health maintenance organizations. So I guess to the extent that health economics maybe plays a significant role, there'd be some question about whether or not staff would be transferred. But I think it would depend upon the current, you know, staffing at the department.
Well, Mr. Koppel, I've been discussing this for some years now. So, and I understand the nuance of these different transfers. The intent of this bill is to transfer just the regulatory part, not the health economics part. And perhaps if this winds up in the omnibus, then there could be clarifying language to just clarify that it's only that those 7.9 employees. So if you would speak just the 7.9 employees, that's the intent, and we can write it to make it conform to that. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My comments are this, that we're in the process right now of, with discussions actually being facilitated through a grant to look at who regulates what in this emerging, in the current marketplace, but also the emerging marketplace. We have ACOs coming. We are talking about different ways of paying for services. We're talking about buying health versus insuring health care. The marketplace has changed dramatically and continues to. And this bill, and I've said this to Representative Anderson, that this may well be one of the answers to what we want to do in the future. But it seems that there are so many things unfolding right now in the marketplace and potentially happening that we would like to have this be come back to you with a, instead of having us respond to this, we'd like to come back next year and say this is where we feel these functions could best be served, because they truly are various functions. One is financial oversight, and we think commerce is the right place for financial oversight. That's their expertise. On healthcare outcomes and measuring quality, that's our expertise. Those are functions. The authority, what we're doing is shifting everything one place or the other, and I would suggest that we look at it by function, where there is expertise in the department to serve that function. That, and I know that's a delay in a sense, it looks that way, but it isn't our intent to delay it, but rather just have a more thorough discussion and look at it by function.
And so what's the schedule on your work groups or your study that you're doing?
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, I think we would be comfortable saying we could come back next year with recommendations.
Well, that's a good start. I appreciate that. Representative Hosh.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to make any assumptions on, so I'm going to ask the question. Chapter 62 deals with health insurance overall, but 256B deals with medical assistance. I just took a look at the differences between the two. So why does it include both the health insurance aspect and then also the medical assistance component within the amendment?
Representative Anderson?
I think Catherine Kmit can answer that question.
Okay, Ms. Kmit.
Excuse me. Mr. Chair and Representative Hosh, 256B is the chapter that where health plans are required to cover people on state public programs, so, and it's only through their HMO, through our HMO license, and so that's the language that would also transfer over, just so that all of that jurisdiction, at least as it relates to quality and those types of functions, would occur at the Department of Commerce. And I just would add one other thing, that it's it would just simply move the staff who already perform all these functions today, who have the expertise to do all of these things today, to the Department of Commerce, one floor up.
Right. Representative Hoff.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, because you're not making a big issue, you know, that this is just moving staff and not even into a different building but to a different floor, why is it so necessary to move 7.9 FTEs to a different floor for regulatory reasons? I mean, if it's not a big deal, then it shouldn't be a big deal to continue how the oversight is happening today.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hosh, well, it has to be a big deal because in order to make this work, we have to change the law, so that's the reason for having a bill in front of you. But the other reason is that you do have two different cultures, a culture at the Department of Health and a culture at the Department of Commerce, and they're two different agencies. And by having two different agencies, they tend to do things a little bit differently. Sometimes they're in concert with each other, but sometimes they're not. And so by having all of the requirements and regulatory functions that apply to HMOs located in one place, there can be better communication between the staff and across the staff for purposes of regulating the HMOs.
Representative Haas.
This was supposed to be one question, but I just have to keep asking the question.
That's okay.
Okay, if the cultures are different, what part of the culture of the Department of Commerce do you like and that you want to move towards, or what part of the culture of the Department of Health that you have concerns with that you want to have a change in regulatory functions?
Everyone name.
Mr. Chairman and Representative.
No, Ms. Commit.
The issue is Anderson. More that it's an insurance coverage, and the Department of Commerce currently regulates insurance. And so that's why, I mean, car insurance, all the other insurances that are currently regulated are regulated by the Department of Commerce. They're already regulating the financial aspects. That's their, you know, what they do, and so they're already doing that piece, and so we just like to have for consistency to move all the whole piece in one department.
Representative Hosh, this has been a discussion for 8 years at least that I remember, and part of the frustration that I sense, I'm glad they're working on it internally, so if this bill goes forward or if it doesn't, it sounds like they're going to be doing what we hope for all those times, but to have a discussion about HMO regulation, you have to have three people there. This is a, you know, they have to have a health person, a commerce person, and a human service person to get the full picture. And I've been amazed at how little their knowledge overlaps or their communications overlap in the day-to-day operations, which creates issues like what we brought up on Valentine's Day about the need for audits and transparency, who knows about what, and is this appropriate or not. So that's my interest in this. So, Representative Hosh, did you want to follow up? Representative, you want to go again?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, we do have a strange system where health insurance is completely regulated, supposedly, by Commerce, and HMOs are regulated by the Health Department. I would take the opposite approach and move health insurance all to the Health Department.
Do you have an amendment?
health insurance is certainly not like automobile insurance. It's not like the usual things that Commerce does. Commerce does a very good job of looking at the financial stability of HMOs or health plans and regulating that, and I think they do a good job. But health insurance is so different, and we are now getting into the area where we're talking about quality of the health care that's provided. And whose responsibility is it to make sure that there is the quality in our healthcare system? Is it the insurance company or the HMO or is it the providers? Who's responsible for that? And who knows something about quality of healthcare? It's the health department. And that's the big future we're dealing with. Deputy Commissioner Koppel mentioned affordable care organizations. One of the big problems there is talking about providers accepting risk. Okay, this is a completely different thing. Has really, what's the insurance function there? If a provider accepts the risk, how do we balance that? But there are such huge changes coming in our healthcare system. I don't think we ought to disrupt where we have the expertise on looking at what quality is, and that expertise happens to be in the health department, and I think it ought to stay in the health department. So I would urge members to not support this particular bill.
I think that's very well said from just a complete point of view. And Mr. Koppel, perhaps as your this bill will go forward or not, your work internally is going forward anyway. So I hope that the discussion does include what Representative Huntley references about what if some things came back. But we just want it to work. This bill is an effort to make it work. And you're it's been a long year for you at these tables, and we're being very kind to you today. I hope you get that. There have been some other days that have been more difficult, but we just want it to work. So, Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, members. Representative Hosh and Huntley covered much of the territory. I have spoken with Representative Anderson in between the first hearing and this one. We had a brief conversation, mostly about what the intention of this is. But Ms. Commit's comments about culture really triggered something for me. We continue to have a healthcare delivery system and payment system that straddles these different worlds, right? So it is about finance, and it is about health, and it's about outcomes. And I don't think trying to compartmentalize the regulation in one place is going to change the fact that we're straddling these worlds. And in fact, I think we could take a step away from the goal of promoting health by doing this. Because we're just going to be thinking about insurance. And unless we want to call the health maintenance organizations insurance maintenance organizations, and maybe that's the direction we're heading, this is about maintaining the insurance and getting rid of the goal of health. I'm not sure that we should be decoupling these pieces. I think they're important to be together. I think it's important to have human services and health and commerce at that table, even though it makes for a big meeting room. So I understand it is maybe a simple move in its application, 7 chairs, 1 floor, but I don't know that the goal is a laudable goal, and I don't think it's going to help us move forward in healthcare.
Well, thank you. It's a good discussion. Representative Lane.
Well, I too have those very concerns. I think that this, if it had been the other way around, moving it out of commerce and into another one, we could have advisory from commerce. But as far as every time commerce comes down about HMOs, it's always solvency. Our only concern is solvency. Our only concern is the insurance solvency. We do insurance. We check the solvency. Over and over again, where is the expertise around health insurance? It does not exist in commerce. We'll put the whole thing there. This is really backwards, in my opinion. Our concern, as we try to get at this issue in those 3 different departments, has not to do with the fact that it's 3 different departments. It has to do with what we have access to. We have insufficient access to the information we need to go forth. It isn't where it is. It isn't going to be solved by shifting it to commerce where there is no expertise. Our question is other than this, and this one is going backwards, in my opinion.
Thank you. Representative Gotwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to weigh in because this is another one of those interesting conversations where I think we get a little passionate about, is it going to be health? Is it going to be only dollars and cents? And I think we're ignoring reality. For most people, it's both. And I think Representative Murphy kind of touched on that a bit. I'm a bit agnostic about where it happens. I'm more concerned about how it's done. Is there a financing mechanism to HMOs or ACOs, which are actually accountable care organizations, on affordable care organizations? I have a little question mark about whether they'll actually be affordable care organizations. But you know, how this happens, how we have health that's the outcome of treatment and taking care of yourself and preventive care, and how you finance how you do that, are integral. I mean, you can't necessarily separate the two. But how you deal with the two parts of that picture, you know, could it be done well in one place? Maybe. You know, if commerce brought in some of the elements that health is currently using around that, might it be a better place? We're talking now about one-stop shopping for people. We want to make it easier for them to go to one place for health care coverage, even though we already have those mechanisms in the state. But we're, you know, the idea here is to try to make it simpler and more streamlined. I think that was the goal of the bill originally. The fiscal note suggests we're not saving any money, at least according to what the state's telling us here. But we have to stop vilifying commerce, Representative Lane, because I'll tell you what, health insurance, insurance by its very nature is meant to help avoid risk and help finance things. It's a financial mechanism primarily. And it's when we expect it to do things it's not meant to do, or we ask it to do things it's not meant to do, that we sometimes get in trouble. So we have to keep that in mind as policymakers. Understand what insurance does well and what it doesn't do well. And when we're talking about public programs, you're absolutely right. You know, you and I have partnered on this idea of transparency. We need to know where the dollars are going and what they're getting. You know, are they getting us health or not? But this whole idea of where it happens, whether it happens in the Department of Health or Department of Commerce, right now you got both kind of doing pieces of both worlds, which is why I think we were talking about trying to bring them together. And that's a worthy conversation, but Mr. Chair, obviously it's not saving a lot of money according to the fiscal notes, so maybe we need to figure it out a different way.
Thanks. Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, I hear tell that when somebody references your name, you get to speak.
Go ahead, yeah.
I just want to say I was not vilifying Commerce. I was saying that their piece is solvency, and they do that piece for insurance. And what you said is we ask something to do what it's not meant to do. You were speaking of a different thing, but when we ask Commerce to do something it's not meant to do, which is oversight on insurance, health insurance, and health, then we're getting into, as you said, into trouble. So Commerce is not there for regulating health. It's there to regulate the solvency of the corporations. So I'm not vilifying it. I'm just specifying what it speaking to what it says.
I just wanted to mention, I said insurance, health insurance. Commerce regulates health insurance, true, but it's insurance that's really meant to be a financial mechanism and help avoid risk and so forth. And Commerce, I think, actually does a lot more than just look at solvency. I think if they were here, they'd probably come down and tell you a lot about what they do. But this is an interesting conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think that they've said their comment for the day. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot's been said, and it's been an interesting conversation. The only thing I want to add, so as not to just cover ground that's been covered, is that we're, first of all, of course, if you want to make a change, then you have to sort of carry the burden of showing why the change should be made. Representative Gottwald may be absolutely right that, you know, it's where it is isn't really the issue so much, but we've got something right now, and then I don't think the burden's been met of showing why we should make this change, and maybe we're all kind of agreeing about that for the time being anyway. But my real point was just in terms of this revisor's instruction and all the things included here, you know, if we're seriously going to make a big change like this, I think we would want to list out and understand what exactly is being changed and not put it in a revisor's instruction. I mean, that seems to me to be a pretty, I don't know, for lack of a better term, kind of passing the buck way to do this, because none of us, even with the explanation here, it's clear we don't understand what would be impacted by this, and we certainly wouldn't want to do it this way if we were really going to do it.
Fair enough. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and maybe this is a question to the author. I was just wondering, if the move would actually take place, will there be some type of ongoing assessment to analyze whether or not we did receive the desired outcomes?
Representative Anderson, or who would like to answer that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, I think the goal of the bill is everything's going to remain the same as what's being done right now. So we're not changing how their duties. We're basically going to be taking the same people that are doing those same duties and just putting them from one department to another department. So we'd have to ask the department how much they regulate themselves right now, and that I would anticipate that everything that's currently being done will continue to be done.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm just going off of what I heard from Representative Huntley, if he's saying which department it should go into. And again, I was just asking if there would be some type of assessment in the event this would take place. And maybe that would provide us with an answer long term, if you will.
Thank you. Anybody else? Last word? Representative Gottwald.
Real quick, as Mr. Chair and members, as long as we're talking about whether we actually move this in total, we're only talking about moving HMOs, I think. And, you know, in other bills, we've talked about also including other managed care organizations like county-based purchasing. So, frankly, if I wanted to see this bill continue, I'd want to see that rolled into it.
Okay. So Oh, Representative Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was late, so I've missed part of this, and I don't want to jump in. But, this sort of reminds me of the evolution of the Office of Early Learning. You know, we had the Department of Human Services with child care, Department of Education with the preschool programs, went on and on and on. This year we have the Department of Early Learning, which now has a children's cabinet. Is the idea of more than moving from one department to the other would be a cross-departmental of the Office of Health Insurance or the Office of, you know, make it and create it and have all the people report to that. I sat on the pay-for-performance committee, the legislation that Representative Downey did, and we had a presentation in Dakota County how they're flattening out and making these things all work together, and all the departments have to work as one, and it's not over here and over there. And I think if we really want to move things forward, we need to think about that. You know, Mr. Koppel, Commissioner Koppel, how well the Children's Cabinet's working and with the Office of Early Learning. I mean, there are examples of things like this we could do. So just, I hope, Mr. Chair, some year we can move towards innovation and not department versus department, but problem solving and lining up our issues and lining up our departments around solving problems as opposed to turf issues. So.
Yeah. I think that's what tries to do, at least in the first step. So I think that there's some level of agreement and fair level of disagreement. So that summarizes the hearing. Do you have the last word, Representative Anderson?
Well, thank you, members. I appreciate all of your time today and just appreciate your support for this bill.
Thank you. And the bill is laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Huntley. And we have a volunteer for the minutes. Going all volunteer.
So moved.
I thought you were too slow, Representative Schumacher. Representative Hamilton wins the trigger figures. Representative Hamilton would like to move the minutes, noting there's no mention of Representative Hayden anymore. Anybody with any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? They're adopted. Thank you. Representative Huntley. Commissioner, welcome.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that House File 2901 be considered for possible inclusion, laid on the table, and be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay. It's not going to the floor, huh? Okay. Well, welcome to the committee, and I see you have some witnesses there who know something about the bill. Do you want to comment first or go to the
I'm just going to give some brief comments and turn it over to, we have two people from the Department of Human Services, and I think we're going to have one or two from the Department of Health. What this bill is the governor's supplemental finance bill for the two departments, Health and Human Services. As some of you may know, we made $1 billion in cuts for the current biennium that we're in last summer, and we made close to $2 billion in cuts for the next biennium in Health and Human Services. What this bill does is not change much of what we did. We're talking about 2 or 3% increase in or decrease in those big cuts we made last year. So it's an attempt. And if you look at the dollar amount, if you look at the spreadsheet, this bill spends $28 million more in fiscal year 13. Than the current budget, and in the next biennium it spends $68 million, and we're talking about $5 billion. So it's a small increase. It does alleviate some of the problems that we caused with the huge cuts we did last summer. Almost all of this additional money is in human services, although there is a small amount, $563,000 in the health department, so we'll have the health department come up later. I've included in your packet a letter from two disability groups, the Legal Aid Center, and Disability Law Center, rather, and another disability group. They support most of what's in the governor's supplemental budget bill. And last thing I want to talk, I'm going to talk specifically about one particular item in here, which is called MERC funding. And for those that don't know, MERC means Medical Education and Research Cost. And how the word research got in there, I don't know, because they don't really fund any research. It's medical education. Most of the money in this particular section, that's if you go to the spreadsheet, it's, I believe, on page 3. Yes. We made big cuts in the MERC funding last year, and where does the MERC money go? It goes to institutions, usually hospitals or clinics, that train people in the healthcare industry, and it's to help them recover the costs of that education. Most of the money goes to residency programs for MDs, so these, although nurse practitioners get a little, nurses get a little, dentists get a little, but most of it's going into residency programs. For those that don't know, a residency, after you get your MD degree, then you have to go specialize, and it's usually done through a residency program. In most cases, particularly in primary care, they lose money on training these people because it costs them a lot of effort to have faculty around or practicing physicians to deal with these people who are trying to learn their trade. And so it slows down the activity of these in-place physicians because instead of treating patients, they're working with the residents. So it's a money loser for all the residency programs because they cannot make up the cost of the education. So what the MERC money tries to do is to partially compensate them for this work. The money is distributed in all these training programs, and the interesting thing about it is we use medical assistance as the basis for this. So that means we get a federal match. So for every dollar that we put in there, the feds put another dollar in. And the downside of that is for every dollar we cut, the providers lose $2. So this section of the bill reduces the cut we made last year in half for this, the rest of this biennium, and completely eliminates the cut in the next biennium. And if you look at the top of page 3 of the spreadsheet, you can see the dollar amounts there. It's $6,464,000 this biennium, and that goes continues on, and so that in the next biennium it would be basically a $12.8 million increase in our budget. And I think with that, I'll turn it over to the Commissioner of Human Services.
Thanks, Dr. Huntley. And before you start, without the R, it'd be MEC, which doesn't sound nearly as cool. So maybe that's why they had it MERC. You're asking why they. Anyway, I just want to take this chance to announce the plan for the next couple of days while the Commissioner's still here and the staff is all still here. And the rest of the time is devoted to the Governor's budget, so that's people can plan their questions accordingly. When this was it? When are we releasing the draft? At 5 o'clock, the draft will be public of our proposal. We were going to come back tonight, but we're doing something on the floor that's going to take up a little bit of time. So we'll not be coming back here tonight. Tomorrow, we'll be doing a walk through the bill at 12:30 and taking testimony. We were going to come back tomorrow evening and take more testimony. However, another project will be taking up our time on the floor of the House, I think related to a tax bill or something, which I think will burn up a little bit of time. If we don't get through all the testifiers on Wednesday, before we mark up our bill on Thursday at 12:30, we'll take additional testimony. I think the testifiers will be happier with this bill than they were last year. The bill left this committee last year was $1.863 billion. This is if you take that 1.863 and add three zeros, the amount of denomination of this bill is the last zero. So it's much smaller. The governor had two zeros he attempted to work with, and we only have one. So it's much smaller. Some of the same ideas in different ways and I'd like to solve some of the ones he solves as well. And so we are going to, if the testimony is done and there's not many amendments, we can be done in our committee time on Thursday. If not, we'll come back after session into the evening to get done. And we'll be done by the time Thursday is over. Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate you laying out the schedule. Isn't the finance deadline a week from tomorrow, a week from Friday? So we're finishing it this Thursday?
That's correct.
So we're ahead of time.
We're ahead of schedule. Oh, I should stay next week.
Okay. Does that mean we're not meeting next week? Or?
Well, that does not mean that. We are still a finance committee. We still have a few bills in our purview we have to deal with. The transparency bill, the Sunset Commission, a number of bills have to be processed out of here. And so when we get the official news, we have a tentative schedule that may be involved two times. That's all tentative. And if you've been here long enough to know what the coroner says today is not necessarily what the coroner will do next week.
Yes.
We will be meeting at least twice next week. We'll try to make sure people know ahead of time as much as they can. And there are bills of great interest, including the rate setting bill. House Bill 2456 has to get out of here. I said Sunset Bill. And there's a couple other smaller ones that don't have controversy, I think. Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair, and I don't know if you can talk about this, but it seems like so you're going to take the bills to Ways and Means to the House floor and get them done before we go on break?
I would like that. That's my goal. That's not an announcement we're leaving early. I want to stay here till our work is done. So I'm just making, then we just want to get them out of here. Prudence, you know, there's some things we need to solve.
Yeah.
So is that clear to members, at least roughly, about the schedule? And the amendments are due by, what, noon or 12:30? 12:30 tomorrow. And I believe the DFL staff has the bill already. That was our conscious effort to be fair. I hope for a smooth process through all this. And so now you've all heard that. Is that clear to everybody? Okay. Well, Commissioner, welcome to the committee, and thanks for sitting through that a little bit. Nice to see you again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm listening to Jessen, Commissioner of the Department of Human Services, and it's good to be here. Under better circumstances, I was thinking about when I was walking up about a year ago this time. So my job this first is to provide some context, which actually, Mr. Chair, you have done and Representative Huntley has done, kind of to talk a little bit about the supplemental budget proposal from the governor, kind of in the context of what we did last year. Afterwards, Chuck Johnson, our Chief Financial Officer, will walk through kind of line by line what's in the House File 2901. And then Abby Reed from the Department of Health will address just one budget item involving home care oversight. It's a budget item for the Department of Health. So, context. Well, I don't think I need to provide a lot of context to this committee. You all know that last year we faced a historic budget deficit. And that we, and I can say, and I've been saying, you do not cut $1 billion from a projected human health and human services budget without harm to people and to providers that care for people. And while those were very hard decisions, I know, for all of you, and certainly for me, for the part I played in them, overall, they were decisions that needed to be made. And we're not here today to walk away from those decisions or from the budget agreement, particularly, frankly, given what appears to be a looming deficit in the next biennium. And Governor Dayton certainly made it clear that we were not even going to entertain the idea of a supplemental HHS budget until after the February forecast, because I know that the governor wanted to be careful financially as well. And even then, the governor sought to only address matters which he thought this really can't wait till next year. And our standard was, is there serious immediate harm which will threaten people or our health care infrastructure? So there are a lot of good ideas, I understand, that and ideas I would think were good ideas that are not in this supplemental budget proposal. But it's also why in this budget proposal we propose to restore some of the emergency medical assistance to cover dialysis and cancer care. While this House File 2901 proposes to restore half of the 2011 reduction in medical education assistance grants, which apparently is not going to fund research. to restore the pay parity for PCAs that are caring for their relatives, for a one-time appropriation for community supports to support our waiver request for the new nursing facility level of care, which the legislature passed in 2009, but that we have not been able to implement until we get a waiver from the federal government. And I do just on that note want to say that we did include in your packet a letter from the governor to the delegation about the encouraging them to support our waiver proposal, because as most of you are aware, if we do not get that waiver, there is a contingent rate cut, which we really, really want to avoid. Actually, I'm going out next week to meet with CMS about this and to meet with the delegation just to press them about the importance of getting to this, approving it, and doing it quickly. We also include two long-term care proposals. These proposals don't eliminate what we did, but they do, I think, provide more of a transition of our reductions in the corporate foster care and congregate living area. And as we've looked at these reductions and seeing how they're playing out, we were concerned that these were disproportionately impacting people we serve with mental illness. And so that's why we included those in this proposal. There are a few other things. Chuck Johnson will walk through them. And certainly we're both here to answer any questions you have about the individual items. And we have, if it's something Chuck and I can't answer, we certainly have members of the department here as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Chuck Johnson, Chief Financial and Operating Officer for DHS. I'm going to walk through the packet of budget pages that you should have in front of you. It goes in the same order as a spreadsheet if you'd rather follow on the spreadsheet. The first item is the item related to the pay parity for PCAs caring for relatives. Last legislative session, we made a reduction of 20% in the rates that are paid for relatives providing PCA services. And we are proposing here to essentially buy that back and to bring the relative PCAs back up to the full pay rate that we pay other PCAs. Folks are aware that this is currently issue is currently under litigation. We're under court order where we are now paying the 100% rate to the relatives. The net effect of that is it makes it somewhat less expensive to buy this back because the forecast has already picked up a portion of the costs that would have otherwise been savings to the state general fund. This would affect about 7,400 recipients and 6,600 individual PCAs who are providing care to their relatives. Mr. Chair, I intend to go through them fairly quickly, and then if folks have questions, just stop me.
I'm sorry. Oh, please go ahead.
Now, Mr. Chair, the next item is emergency assistance coverage. We eliminated last year certain categories of services from coverage for emergency assistance, and as Commissioner Justin suggested, have concluded that we might have gone too far in some of the reductions we made there, but had some real negative impacts on very vulnerable people. We're proposing here to restore coverage for kidney dialysis and for cancer treatment. The cancer treatment is structured just as that. It's for anybody who has a cancer diagnosis that's not in remission to cover any of the services they need. It was it didn't make sense to try to pick out individual services because cancer treatment is a multiple kind of service delivery. We will get federal reimbursement on both of these items. We know we will on dialysis. We believe we will on cancer treatment as well, partly why we chose to buy those two services back from the EMA proposal.
I think I'll just have you just go through them, then we'll take questions at the end. That'll be the best
use of our
time, and then maybe people get their questions answered halfway through. So we'll assemble a list if you want to sign up for the list, but there'll be time for everybody. Mm-hmm. Right, so we'll just keep on going.
Mr. Chair, the next item on page 6 is MAEPD, employed persons with disabilities. This is the medical assistance option that we have for people with disabilities, allows them to work, and waives essentially the income standard and raises the asset standard for those individuals, allows them to retain the MA coverage that they need in order to work because they can't get coverage elsewhere. This is not actually a buyback from last year. This is a fix to a problem that I think folks are aware of that has come up. It's had to come multiple times over the last few years, but again this year. What this proposal does is actually two things. One is it allows people with disabilities to access MAEPD at any age, so it doesn't cut it off at age 65. And then it also allows folks who hit their 65th birthday and have been using the MAEPD program to essentially get the MAEPD higher asset limit at that point when they're transitioning into the elderly MA, so they don't actually end up worse off. They're able to keep the asset limit they had under the MAEPD program, which is $20,000. This is an issue that I know we've already been in discussion with since the governor's budget came out. This is our proposal, but we're open to discussion around other areas. I know folks have been continuing to work from the department with stakeholders and members on finding a good option that'll help fix this problem.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, next on page 8, Representative Huntley already covered this about as well as I could. This is the restoration of the MERC funding, half in 2013 and then full restoration in 14 and 15. The next item on page 10 was also under discussion in the earlier bill. This is a proposal to delay the closure of Wilmer until the end of fiscal 2013 with a cost of $549,000 this year and $2.7 million in the next year. Mr. Chair, on page 12 is a proposal related to the licensure of home and community-based services providers. This is a federal compliance issue. This is actually a piece of another piece that I believe this committee has already heard in House File 2456, which has the standards for licensing for these providers as well as the rates. Essentially, several years ago, the federal government informed us that they believe we are out of compliance with federal law around how we operate the home and community-based services in Minnesota, largely because we operate through a county-based system, and so right now counties contract for the individual providers for services and set rates. So we're in a multi-phase process here we've been working on for several years to essentially try to centralize and be more consistent across the state in how we deliver these services. The piece you have in front of you is the licensure piece. This is to centrally license the providers who deliver home and community-based services in Minnesota under the waiver programs, the brain injury waiver, CAC, CADI, developmental disabilities, the elderly waiver, and alternative care program. It's about 1,100 providers that we've identified that would be impacted by this. The first phase of it, which is proposed here, would affect 445 providers who are currently not licensed by the state, and this would begin the licensure process with those providers. And if you look on page 13 in the budget book, you'll see those are the phase one services that are at the top of that chart. In order to do the licensing, consistent with the change we made last year, we are supporting all licensing with fees. This is also a fee proposal, which would have a $585 initial fee for these providers and a $750 annual fee going forward for these providers. There's a phase two. You'll see those providers at the bottom of the page. Phase two we come back with next year. These are providers we already licensed, but we need to work on developing new standards and so forth to align the current licensing with the licensing we need under the changes we need to make for the home and community-based services.
Yeah, keep going.
Mr. Chair, on page 15, essential community support grants. This is essentially fixing a problem from last year's budget proposal. This goes back to 2009 when the legislature passed the nursing facility level of care proposal, and as part of that created something called essential community support grants, which are essentially grants to help the individuals who may not meet the nursing facility level of care and may still need services in the home or in the community to provide those flexible services. When we last year created the contingent situation where we essentially have set up in law now on July 1 of this year a contingent decision where if we are able to get a waiver from the federal government, implement the nursing facility level of care, which right now is held up on implementation because of federal maintenance of effort concerns, if we're able to implement that on July 1, we need to have these dollars in place in order to support the alternative for the people who may not be able to get into the waivers in nursing facilities under the nursing facility level of care waiver. This also not in the budget page, but in Representative Huntley's bill is some technical language that also fixes a problem with that contingent setup, which is essentially the way the language reads now. if we don't get the waiver from the feds and the nursing facility level of care by July 1, to implement July 1, we have to put the 1.67 rate reduction into place, and we can't change it after that. The language in the bill would give us the flexibility to say if we don't get the waiver by July 1, but we get it, say, by October 1, we'd be able to turn off the 1.67 rate reduction and put the nursing facility level of care changes in its place. So it gives us that flexibility based on timing. Page 16, this is moderation of corporate foster care capacity. You recall in last year's budget we had a provision which closed some corporate foster care beds when those beds were vacated for particular reasons. After working with providers in the community on this, we're trying to essentially slow this down a little bit, as Commissioner suggested, to phase it in a little bit more slowly. What this proposal does is it still ends up affecting the same number of foster care beds over time and achieving the same savings over time, but it pushes it all back by about a year. And what we would do in the next year is work with the counties to do a needs assessment of the foster care beds across the state, so that when we move into actually the closure of beds, instead of closing literally the bed where the person vacates, we'd instead look at where across the whole system in the state it's appropriate to close a bed, because we don't need that kind of a bed in that location for that capacity. So it allows us to take a more systemic view of how we're doing this, rather than just literally closing a bed. We may really need that bed in that community. Page 18, we made changes last year to reduce the congregate living rates for some individuals who are determined to have lower needs, and the rate reduction that was provided last year was a 10% rate reduction. This page lowers that to a 5% rate reduction, so we're essentially buying back about half of that rate reduction. We still want to focus on trying to differentiate payments by needs, but the 10% reduction seemed like it went a little bit too far. Mr. Chair, the last item for the Department of Human Services on page 19, this is related to a change that was made last year. Last year's budget bill included a provision to transfer services that are currently provided by Manoman County to members and family members of those who are members of the White Earth Nation, and essentially to transfer those services to the White Earth Nation so White Earth could take over control and delivery of human services to their own members and their families. As part of that, in moving forward with that initiative, and we're making quite a bit of progress with White Earth and Manoman on this, we identified that one of the gaps in here is this $542,000, which essentially represents a portion of the services that are the cost of services that are currently being provided to White Earth members that is essentially county dollars, the Manoman county dollars. And in order for White Earth to take over the services and have the funding that they need in order to make this work, we need to provide them with those additional dollars to fill that gap. We are still in the process of working with White Earth on sort of designing what their services are going to look like and getting a better idea of how that's going to have an overall impact on the budget. It is possible in some ways we could save money in other areas by White Earth's ability to leverage more 100% federal funding, but we don't have the certainty of that right now to know how it's going to affect the state's budget. Mr. Chair, that's it for the Department of Human Services.
Okay, so I think we'll... let's just do the Department of Health, then we'll go to questions. I have a bunch. And so, Ms. Reed, do you want to come up and do your last page there?
Thank you.
Mr. Koppel, welcome back. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, my name is Jim Koppel, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Health. We are here today to present our one budget request. It's a little simpler this year. In that just introduction, with me is our Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Reed, and she will go through the item, but I just wanted to frame it around the fact that this is kind of reflective of the age wave that we even are seeing and will continue to see in how it has impacted home care. And as she goes through the explanation, you'll see the growth in the demand for the home care services, but also growth in professionals. And while that has gone on, there has been, we have not had the ability to keep up with the licensure and oversight of that particular profession. So I believe this is part of a bigger discussion that we'll have at some point, and but it's an introduction to our particular fiscal note. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Abigail Reed. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Health, and you'll find our item on the last page of your packet for the change items and also the last page of the bill. And as the Deputy Commissioner said, this is really reflective of the Governor's priority around protecting vulnerable adults, reflecting that the growth in the industry has been large in the last couple years, and our regulation has not kept pace. And it's an urgent issue that the Governor wanted to address this year. And really, just as a background, home care is really a broad field. It's actually kind of any services provided in a client's home for activities of daily living, like meals or bathing, or also both basic and complex health care needs. And it may be provided to children, adults, or the elderly, really anywhere they live. Could be a single-family home, could be housing with services, it could be assisted living. And it's a really diverse industry. It's actually providers who have just a few clients all the way to those with many. And they may be in one location, they may be in multiple locations around the state. And we've actually regulated as a department this industry since 1987. And currently, though, our funding only supports 5 staff. They're trained nurses who do investigations and inspections. And that actually is supposed to cover 1,500 providers statewide. And those providers, again, operate in multiple locations. And those 5 staff do a lot of things. They review license applications. They conduct on-site inspections. They investigate complaints from providers. We investigated 279 complaints against providers last year. With a number of follow-ups. They undertake enforcement actions as necessary, depending on what they find when they go to the inspections. And they also do a lot to inform consumers about their rights and actually the providers about their responsibilities. And right now we have 5 staff. What this initiative would do would add another 4 staff. And that would allow us to nearly double the number of inspections we do. We currently have a backlog, actually, of 290 providers who've entered the industry and have not been, and they've been in the industry for more than a year and have not received an inspection. And so it would actually allow us to make sure that when anyone enters this fast-growing industry, they receive an inspection in the first year. And it would also allow us to start building to keep pace. This won't do all of it, but we'll be building to keep pace with the continued growth. And really, again, it's just the next step in a continuous improvement process we've actually been undergoing in this program for a few years. And the governor felt it was very important to do this year.
Well, thank you, Ms. Reed, Mr. Koppel. I think what we'll do is let's take questions on this piece, and then the Department of Health can be dismissed if they want to stay or go. Other questions? Representative Fritz, you're first on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm sorry, I didn't get your name. Abigail Reed. Ms. Reed, well, this is a great proposal, but it's not nearly enough money to do the work. And you know, for where I live in Rice and Steele County, and you know my background. I worked all of those many years in the nursing home, and now there are many homes assisted living. I think I have 11 in one town, and I have. There are problems in there, in those places, that need to be looked at. I have one now that's been in the newspaper where in a beautiful, beautiful setting, it's a beautiful place, it looks like a mansion, my mother said. I might have to have my mother live in a mansion, but actually what goes on under that roof is shorter staff than in nursing homes. And in one of my facilities, I do have a very, very difficult situation where there were some women who in the memory unit were sexually abused by another patient and were not, we weren't staffed or educated either about what to expect and how to be there at all times to take care of those very vulnerable mothers. So we have now people taking their mothers out and putting them into my nursing home and trying to find places for them. So this is an area of deep concern for me. That is not nearly enough money. 5 people that you have could not possibly do the job that they should be doing, and 4 more I think is going to help.
But you need to be out there and be more proactive in that area. I feel like I've taken 20 steps backwards in the nursing home area when we had very little regulation. And now we do regulate the nursing homes, but we don't regulate and follow through even in a lot of these assisted living places. So I applaud the governor's efforts, although small, in this area, and will continue to work on improving that. Thank you.
Thanks, Upson Fritz. Now, is there any county involvement with any oversight of these places, or was there once and then it's been shifted to the state? Can you give me just a short history of that, just like a one-minute version?
The agents.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Susan Winkleman. I'm the Assistant Division Director in the Division of Compliance Monitoring, and among other things, we regulate home care.
Well, and my question was, you have five people for the whole state, and I presume you're complaint-driven just to keep up with the demand. And was this once a county function you took over, or when is the last time they had any piece of this?
Mr. Chair, my recollection about this was given to me in history, so I believe that originally, many, many years ago, that these services were undertaken by the counties. And then at some point, maybe perhaps when federal certification came in, and then the Department of Health undertook the state licensing part of it. So I'm not sure if that muddles your question.
No,
more
just trying to understand the problem. And so people, these 300 new providers, never even got an initial inspection of any kind? And do they pay a fee or something?
Mr. Chair, it's a matter of we try and take from not just the new people, but we try and have a mix of providers that we're getting out to. We encountered a number of serious issues back in 2008 and 2009. That's when we started to really look internally and think we need to do things differently. We did hire two additional staff, but we're still drowning in work. And yes, they do pay a fee, and it's based on income or based on number of clients served.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's about Representative Loeffler, and I think, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this is a start, but it's only a tiny start towards what I think is a growing problem and in home care, in that people are paid so little that there's just constant turnover, and our ability to even just get out once in a year for an agency that may have had 30-40% turnover in their employees doesn't really get to the issue of whether or not there's enough training or oversight of those individuals who quite honestly put their clients at risk when you see this list of violations that we've seen here, including people reusing medical equipment, not washing hands. I mean, just basic sort of things that you need to know when caring for someone who's very sick. And so I'm hoping that in the next year you'll come back to us with some more in-depth recommendations about how we might really step this up beyond just, you know, once a year, once every 3 years on-site investigation, but actually some preventative training, doing some other things, because we just really need to have this be a healthy, robust service system for our aging population, and we need to have it be one that people can trust. And I think it's going to take some bigger reform, but this is just a tiny, tiny step. Thank you to your staff for doing all that you do with so little.
Short response, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler. I'm glad you brought that up. The health department has undergone a process with a group of stakeholders, including providers, for a number of years to restructure our kind of complex-sounding licensing system, streamline some of the procedures, and also increase some of the consumer protections that we need. So we'll be hopefully ready for that next session.
Well, thanks. So I think we'll leave that at that. So thanks for coming to the Department of Health. You can stay and enjoy the human service presentation if you like, which will involve no references to commerce. So now we'll take questions on Representative Fritz, but I have a few questions, and then people can ask their own questions. And I don't know who knows this best. On the PCA piece, some of the providers are still holding money back in case there's a clawback. Could we develop a state policy on this that we're not going to claw it back so they can people will not think they're getting cut this year when they aren't being cut?
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Jessen.
state law, as it is today, directs us to go after, you know, money if it's wrongfully, you know, paid out. But so we would need some direction, not to, you know, either from the legislature, or there could be some from the courts in this pending litigation, not to do that. You know, my understanding, and I would certainly can ask, I think Assistant Commissioner Lauren Coleman's here, who probably has more detailed information than I do about this. But in general, what we have, well, maybe I'll leave it at that, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Would you like some more information about this?
Not right now. I just, I think as the process moves forward, it seems to me like it would be, you know, I know that it came out of the committee and out of the process, and I know who made it up, which was me. So I'm taking my responsibility on that, and it made sense at the time trying to keep the system intact. But it was enjoined, and I accept that. But it wasn't my intention to punish anybody, and by keeping money that they have coming, people who deserve money are not getting it because providers are fearful of having us take it back. And so since it's here now, I think it's appropriate that we would declare a policy that even if the lawsuit should go, if you're allowed to put it into place, that there any changes would not happen until after the judge made his ruling. And I think then these folks get money they have coming, and somebody's not making interest on money that's not there. So that's my interest in that. So we can work with that along the way, perhaps.
I'd be happy to work with you on that, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thanks. I just have a few questions. I was on that licensing thing that for the new providers for the 245D license. Year one is lower than the year two. Why is that? And that just seems curious. Usually year one is more because you have to make paperwork. And the second thing is I'm carrying the bill for this. Why wasn't this part of the bill originally?
Mr. Chair, to your second question first, because it had a budget impact, we had to separate it out from what was considered a policy-only bill, even though the budget is net neutral, obviously, with the fees.
That's like 22, you have to, because you can't do the 245D without the fee, so it's ironic, so never mind.
I believe the lower cost in 2013 is a phase-in. Also, the application fee is a little bit lower than the ongoing fee, so I think that contributes to it as well.
Well, I was just curious if the application... Oh, it's fine. It's just the curious. Usually the startup is always more. And then on the essential community support grants, that seems like something we really... I don't know how I pay for this, but it seems like something we need to do if we're going to get the waiver. And it's not in the forecast. It was left out of the forecast and all that in terms of the 1.67. It should have been 1.68 or something to get more money or whatever, the other, whichever way it would have gone. Is if the waiver is received, is this assume a waiver coming on July 1st? And if it's later, it would be less, right?
Mr. Chair, I believe that would be correct, that if the waiver were received sometime later, we wouldn't need the same amount of money. We'd need some proportionate amount based on what chunk of the year it was.
Okay. I'll just fly through my few questions, then I'll take others. On the medical, on the grants, bed closure, the money we saved in our budget was like $1.27 million. And on page 16 of your sheets, it's like $1.6 million to buy it back. So... how could that be more than what we saved in the first place?
Mr. Chair, in fiscal year 13, in order to do the needs assessment, we've added a $250,000 grant to the counties to support that, as well as one temporary FTE for the department.
Thank you. Just pay attention to your numbers here. And the last thing is on the Mahnomen County piece. I wish I would have said... the bill that money attributable to the service of these clients would follow the clients. We try to be nice about that. Can you tell me, is that that's the property tax paid by the tribal members that they would have paid to serve their own folks as well as whatever county monies are there? Is that this piece?
Mr. Chair, that is the amount that Mahnomen County paid for human services through their own tax base. It's actually 3/4 of that amount, because we estimate that 3/4 of the people they were serving were White Earth members for Well, it was actually calculated on a fiscal year 11, I believe, and then we moved it forward.
And so it's the position of your department that they should get to keep money that they're not going to earn? Did I say it not very nice? I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, they being Mahnomen County.
They being Mahnomen County.
Mr. Chair, there's definitely a benefit to Mahnomen County from this proposal, as there is for the counties that surrounded White Earth and Leech Lake when we did the Child Welfare Initiative several years ago.
And they won't be reducing their levy. They're just going to, to your knowledge, is that the plan? And if they reduce their levy, I could understand that to be different. But do you think they'll be reducing their levy to reflect this savings in their workload?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if they're going to reduce their levy or not. That's not something this proposal directly addresses.
I know we're not the tax committee. Okay, well, thank you. I'm glad it's moving along. That's a very important proposal. And if this makes it work better, I guess I'm okay with it. But I hope that can be negotiated better than this, is my interest. So, Commissioner, do you want to say something stepping on out of line here?
Mr. Chair, if I can address that as well.
Please.
I think as Mr. Johnson said earlier, we are really very hopeful, actually, that this White Earth transfer will, one, you know, help it address some of the very real health disparities, you know, that we see, which I think is very important. We also think it has the potential really to save money to the state in the long term, because we will be able to, the tribe will be able to access 100% federal dollars. We're not able to build this in now, but we want to make this project work, and we think we need to fund some of this, these monies, to make it go smoothly with the county so that this can work. But if we look at this as almost like a pilot project, if we can make it work here, better outcomes, and ultimately show that because we are saving those federal dollars, that we are ultimately, even with this money, which will go to the county, saving dollars, that this is perhaps something we can replicate elsewhere. So we do think this is a good investment of our funds at this time.
So maybe just let them know there's some pushback on the county retaining the funds, that they're not doing any work yet. So Representative Fritz. You do have something on that, yeah. DHS part.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the Commissioner, I want to publicly thank you for sending four workers from the department to Rice County Social Services this past Saturday and the Saturday before to help us process the increase in numbers. And I mean large increase in numbers of applications for assistance in my community. And I wanted to publicly thank you, and to also publicly state that the increase in need has impacted my district so much so that my financial workers and social workers, I believe, have even been working Saturdays as well. But we needed to ask the commissioner for help from up here to come down and help us go through stacks of applications. And these are people who did have PCAs, who had family members, who have all of the things that are in this bill, who need all of the services that are in this bill that were cut. So the cuts were drastic. The cuts were inhumane. The cuts hurt. I have a dialysis center in my district, and I had unfortunately people died, and because of the lack of transportation and money and process of. I have had doctors, internal medicine doctors, heart specialists, primary physicians, who have emailed me and asked me why, and I, you know, and move it faster, and why wasn't it done faster, and how can we get things done faster? And I guess one of the ways was sending down four workers, but the last way to do it was to cut these most vulnerable, the sickest of the sick in my community, and I just wanted to make that clear. On the PCA, the relative piece, I do have grandmothers who are caring for one, a quadriplegic grandson who was in a car accident. This could happen to any of us. And she called me and wanted to know why she was cut. So I'm thankful that this is in litigation and that it is still being paid, and hope that it continues. And I hope it impacts all of us to know that we all have people, that this could be any one of us in this situation. And for the other areas that you're supplementing or trying to put back some of the cuts that were made to this most vulnerable population, I'm grateful, but we have a lot more we could do. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess that's a statement. Representative Hosh.
It is a statement.
thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do appreciate the opportunity for the committee to hear this proposal. I think it's much that needs to be done. But one of the questions that I have, and I don't know if it's for Mr. Johnson or for the commissioner, but the MAEPD, that's just the asset disregard, right? So if an individual reaches the age of 65, they still will no longer be eligible for MAEPD because of a waiver would have to be granted in the first place, correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hosh, no, it actually addresses the assets, but it also addresses the age on eligibility to say that you can be eligible for MAEPD regardless of age.
Well, Mr. Johnson, or Representative Hosh, I'll let you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Johnson. I'm wondering what's happened between now and in past years where the fiscal note was much greater for that waiver request.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hosh, my understanding is that it is a, we're doing it through a state plan amendment, not through a waiver, which we can do because we're not putting restrictions on the eligibility. We're just saying that we're not going to have an age as a test for eligibility, and that allows us to do it more quickly and to get federal reimbursement right away. Part of the issue with the other direction of going the waiver is you don't get federal reimbursement until the waiver is approved, and so you're paying 100% of the cost until the waiver kicks in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Johnson. Why did it take this long to get to that point, to this point then? Because, I mean, we've attempted to do this in years past, and we always got a multi-million dollar fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, since I'm not sure that I can answer that for you.
well, Mr. Chair, I want to say I think it's phenomenal that this is included in the supplemental budget, and I hope that this is something the committee can pass and can be signed into law.
Well, Mr. Johnson, just to that point, then I have Representative Slawick, but the moral proposal that this committee heard and was going to move forward, you'll see at 5 o'clock, was a little less expensive, but it had state-paid, 6 months of state-paid work till the waiver got accomplished. And that was age 67. Is this unlimited age? And then the assets are $20,000?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Really? This is by far the better bargain, then, isn't it? That's only, this is like another $50,000 or more or so than what that was, I think. Is that right?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. That's what we thought, too, when we were looking at it, that it seemed like it was a little less expensive way to go.
Representative Hosh, we agree on something. So. And so is this, this assumes an effective date as of when for the extended age?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's effective on enactment.
Because you can just amend the plan amendment and or amend the plan, and so it's quick. All right. Cool. Representative Slawick.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. It's effective April 1
of
this year.
Really? Oh, so a retro, unless it got upon enactment, or a retro is to April 1.
Right.
Representative Hosh is even happier.
Let's pass it now.
This one might go to the consent calendar. Representative Slawick.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good job. First, as far as a comment, you know, I would echo what Representative Fritz and Representative Hosh had to say, in that there is a lot of good things in this bill. But, you know, I you know, Commissioner, I think back to the shutdown and the fact that Representative Abler was there and you were there, Chair Abler, and we weren't. And we saw a lot of really bad things come out of the shutdown that we had no control over. This is the first attempt to fix some that we can see, and so we very much appreciate that. But we hope if that ever happens again that we will have a voice in the room. Because there's stuff in here that's missing. There's stuff that happened during the shutdown that isn't fixed in here. Mm-hmm. And one of those, and you know it's the thing that I talk about over and over, is childcare. You know, we did a 2.5 rate cut last time, and there's nothing in here to address that. So we have the federal government saying a kid is a kid is a kid. We're going to reimburse kids so that they can get child care, like market rate child care, and we're not paying like that. So a lot of child care people, they're not going to take those kids. Or those kids are going to stay home, or they're going to be in front of the TV, or they're going to, we don't know where they're going to be. And so here we have our achievement gap. Here we're trying to move ahead, and we're not doing anything in there. The other thing that's missing that I think Representative Abler is going to come out with in his bill is the teen absent day funding, I hope, as well as the accreditation monies. Again, our teen parents, keeping them in school. We know how moms do is how kids do. The better the moms do, the better the kids do, and that absent day money is there. So, Commissioner, we've talked about this a little bit, but can you talk a little bit about when you're going to propose some good things for teen care?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, I think I started out by saying there are a lot of good ideas that are not included in this supplemental budget bill, that we were looking at the standard of kind of serious immediate, you know, harm standard. You know, and when I think about, you know, and child care was certainly one of the things that, you know, came to my mind when I thought, okay, something that maybe that I wish we could do. And I certainly understand the concern about our child care rights. We are at the department want to take an overall look at how we pay our child care rates and come not only with just some sort of, you know, hopefully some additional money we can put into child care, but also look at how we're doing it. Right now we have a system that is very much unnecessarily complex in the way we do child care rates. We need to not only address the rates themselves, but the process, and that's something we very much want to come back to the legislature next session to address.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slough.
And you're going to think about the teen absent day? I am going to ask you this in front of everybody.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Slowick, I'm happy to think about lots of things.
Mr. Chair.
You know, there are a number of things we might support that are not in this budget because, you know, of the standards that we used given these times. You know, and I would say, if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative, to address your earlier comments about the shutdown, you know, I certainly, speaking for myself, and I would be surprised if I were not speaking for Representative Gottwald and Chair Abler as well, to say that that was not the way any of us sought to or wanted to negotiate a budget. You know, there are certainly things that many people could have shared with us, expertise that would have been good to have. We were trying to do the best we could under the kind of rules that we were given, and, you know, and worked hard to and collaboratively most of the time to do that.
And I would echo the words of the commissioner about that time. It was very difficult. Representative Slowick.
Mr. Chair, just a last word. And we appreciate that. However, there was obviously a lot of things going on, and but we do need to think differently in the future. And I know, I know health care is important, and I know you guys spend hours and hours on that, but the kids of the state are important too. And I just hope at some point we'll get our fair share, and the elderly and all the other people out there that need things. And I know the needs are always bigger than the wants. I think that the governor talks about that, and then when they get something they want more. But I am thankful for the governor and for your work, but hope we can continue to think more about the kids.
Representative Huntley, you get the last word if you like. The list is exhausted, and we're not, so.
Well, I'd like to thank the chair and the members for listening to this. I think this is a very important bill. There's lots of good things in it. I know there are many things in here that the chairman would like to put in this bill, and things that he agrees with. And so with that, I would renew my motion to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
And Representative, Commissioner, and Mr. Johnson, and all the support staff that are here waiting to answer questions. The Department of Health, thank you for that. I think Mr. Reich left from Commerce. We're adjourned. Good.